Good morning, everyone. This is Brandon Matloff in Los Angeles. Welcome to the Giving Collective of the South Bay podcast, where we sit down with individuals and couples from the LGBTQ community and hear about their stories. This season, my colleague Laura Landergott and I are exploring the topic of family formation in our series entitled Pathway to Parenthood. Today, we're talking with our special guests, Yael Zinkow and Molly Hoffman, longtime partners and now new parents. Yael is a writer and producer known for the Netflix hit In the Dark and also Bones, which is on Fox. Molly is in casting at BuzzFeed. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Hi, we're so excited to be here.
Thanks for having us.
All right. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us about your family.
Sure. Well, for a long time, our family was just me and Molly. We got
years
married
and years.
Years and years. We got married in 2017. Is that right? 2017.
Yeah. Yes. Well, we met like 16 years ago.
Yes. At Jewish summer camp. And now, and then after we got married, you know, we enjoyed just the two of us for a little bit. And then how long ago did we start?
I mean, we always talked about having a family and we always knew that having a family was important to us. We both come from really big families, siblings, cousins. It's really important to us. But, and we always knew that like making a family was going to be different for us, but we didn't know what it was, how long it was going to take or what it was going to take, but we knew it was going to be different. So in like, 2019, maybe like a year and a half after we got married, we were like, let's start the process. Let's, cause we know it could take a little bit of time, but like,
and we also just didn't know anything about it really. Like we didn't know what it was going to take. We didn't know what it would take financially,
physically.
We just had no idea. So that was just sort of like, okay, let's just like dip our toes in the shallow end and figure out.
So did this conversation start 15, 16 years ago, or did the family formation start more in the last couple of years?
I mean, like Molly said, always like, you know, I think any couple that wants a family, there was always like, oh, one day we'll have kids. One, you know, it was all hypothetical. And then I would say like 3 years ago is when we were really like, okay, this isn't a hypothetical anymore. Let's make it happen. Whereas a heterosexual couple, that would just mean probably stopping whatever mode of contraception they're using. For us, like Molly said, it was sitting down with a doctor and basically that was sort of our first, like,
okay, what are our options?
What are our options here? And what are the steps that we can take?
So
3 years ago.
Of all the options that were presented to you, how did you kind of work through them and how did you land on the ones that you did?
The one that we landed on was our last option. So the first option that was presented to us was the least expensive and the least invasive. And we're like, yes, let's go with that. That is called an IUI. And that's what our regular OB suggested to us. He was like, this, you guys are both at the time, you guys are both young and healthy, and this is a good option for you guys. And what an IUI is basically insemination of sperm into one of us. So we had to had to go and get sperm.
Yeah. So that was our first big expense. That was our first big, like, oh my God, this is going to be, because we thought that would be the cheapest option. And then we started looking into sperm. And at that point we had to decide.
That's when also things got real, because it was like, oh, we have to pick the other biological half of our child.
Right. Which is no easy feat.
If you're in a heterosexual couple that doesn't have fertility issues and you do need to get, and you're just dating, you don't date based on like, oh, their paternal grandfather has cancer, so I'm not going to date that person.
Right. You have to, but then all of a sudden when you're looking at a piece of paper that has this person's like GPA and their, you know, what sports they can play and what they got on their SATs and their family's entire medical history, suddenly you're distilling a human being into these numbers, which is just something that you just wouldn't do if you were just looking for a partner that was going to be the other biological half of your child.
So were you looking for something specific? Was there things that you were like, this sticks out and like, we want to look in this direction? Were you thinking about people you knew? Like, how did you...
Well, we started with maybe, well, we first, started with...
Well, first we went to the California Cryobank. It's reputable. They take care of everything in terms of like washing the sperm and like lawyers
spinning
and all of that.
Sperm,
and doing
it,
everything like...
Who knew?
Yeah, everything that they have to do medically and strategically and like financially, they take care of everything. So you pay a premium and they take care of everything else. So in terms of like going to a friend, that's one option people can do. But for us, it was easier to just like have that out of the equation. So we didn't have to like get lawyers to like write up a contract with a friend.
Well, no, remember what happened was we went to the California Cryobank thinking this will be the easiest option. And it turned out that one vial of sperm, which is like, I don't know if you guys have seen the Elizabeth Holmes documentary, but it looks like the Nanotainer. It's like a teeny, teeny, tiny little test tube. And it's $1,000 for one of those. So when you're doing insemination, it's $1,000 for one attempt. And that's what you get every month. And that's like a 17% chance that it works.
That's so, this is still through IUI.
Yeah.
I feel like we're jumping around.
So it's $1,000 for sperm. And we were like, oh my God, that's so expensive. Maybe we should look for someone we know. But then when we talked to our doctor about it, he said it actually winds up being just as, if not more expensive to get someone you know, because you're paying for everything kind of like a la carte. You're paying for them, the washing of the sperm, like Molly said, the like cleaning of it, whatever they do, you're paying for legal fees because you have to fill out a lot of paperwork when you're having somebody else's biological child. And so it winds up, they said, for a lot of couples actually being more expensive as opposed to when you get it through a sperm bank, because like Molly said, everything's kind of like bundled together.
The biggest thing that we wanted to do was narrow it down by ID disclosure, which is making sure that our child, our future child, could find the sperm donor if she wanted to when she was 18, just so she had the option.
Yeah.
So that kind of narrowed it down to literally
like 30% of them or something. Most of the sperm donors, at least where we were looking, did not want their ID disclosed.
Which we understood, but we wanted to give her the option just so she didn't resent us one day.
Yeah.
So then from
Interesting. So you could choose whether you wanted the person to be anonymous didn't want. So, and you could also choose now if you wanted to meet that person as well. Is that an option?
We cannot meet them. She has the option when she turns 18.
Got it.
To basically go to the cryobank and say, here's my sperm donor number. What's his name? And then she gets the name. We do have for her up until she turns 18. They basically gave us a USB drive that has all the stuff that we were able to see when picking out the sperm donor. So like all of that I mentioned earlier, the SAT scores and the, he has like an interview that you can listen to, and a piece of art, I think, that he did.
Just like his medical history, his parents' medical history, all of that.
Right. Cause that's also important. And we've already found we'll be in pediatrician appointments and they're like, is there any history of heart disease in the family? And we're like, oh, we have to bring this stuff to the, it's just stuff that like we haven't thought about. Like, oh, we have to bring those forms to the doctor.
Was there an aha moment when you were searching that you're like, okay, this is the right one?
Well, jumping ahead a little bit, sorry, Molly. She was actually the sperm donor was the third, for her was the third one we chose. The first one, the aha moment was that we knew it was going to be Molly's egg at the time. We thought it was going to be Molly's egg at the time. Spoiler alert. It ended up. Sorry. I'm so sorry.
See, this is, oh my God, I'm stressed.
we had so many different chapters of the story at the time, because it was insemination.
And I really wanted to carry a baby.
And Molly really wanted to carry a baby. It was going to be Molly's egg. And we saw this sperm donor whose childhood photo looked exactly like me. So we were like, oh, okay. Like, that this way it can maybe kind of look like me, even though it's Molly's egg.
Right.
So that was sort of, and then on top of that, he had like a good medical history. Like I said, we had already gotten rid of all the ones who were anonymous. And then basically Molly got pregnant twice using insemination, both ended in miscarriage, unfortunately. And then there were a few IUIs that just didn't take at all. And so at that point, we decided, okay, time to move to an IVF clinic.
So that was our second option. Well, it ended up being our
second. Was it the second option because of the cost or because of the overall strategy?
I would say because of the cost. I think that had we gone into it with like all the money in the world, we would have gone straight to IVF just because then we could do what's called reciprocal IVF, which is what we ended up doing, where you take one egg from one of the partners and put it into the uterus of the other partner, so that we could kind of both be involved physically.
But still at the time, we did not know both of our fertility struggles. So at the time we thought I was just having miscarriages because they just weren't taking. My first miscarriage was pretty traumatic. I became septic and was in the hospital and almost died. And they just thought that was like a fluke. And then my second miscarriage was just like a typical miscarriage where like the embryo was probably genetically abnormal. So then the doctor was like, you still are able to get pregnant. We can still try to do IVF with you. We can do Yael's egg, which is kind of what we wanted to do all along. And we're like, okay, we've gathered the money to do this. Let's do it.
And we decided to use
a second sperm donor,
because they said it basically like it couldn't hurt. We don't know if the sperm was the issue or the egg was the issue, but let's just, you know, change it all up. So it was my egg and we're going to put it into Molly. So it turns out that my eggs were not
good quality.
So in the words of the embryologist, the sperm bounced off my eggs. It's like your egg is rejecting the sperm. And I was like, so I'm gay on a biological level. My eggs do not want sperm. We did
egg retrieval, which is where they take your eggs out. And
at that point, insurance, when you don't know, this is what's really tough. You don't know your egg quality until either you have tried for many, many, many months with insemination or I guess vaginal sex. You wouldn't know that your egg quality is low until you have basically been doing this for a very long time.
Or sounds like the next great business idea.
Egg, seriously, if someone could figure out egg quality from the outside in, it would be huge, because you just don't know. And so we did an egg retrieval, which cost out of pocket, $30,000 for the whole, not just the egg retrieval, but the
making of the embryos
and then entering it, $30,000 out of pocket, only to find out my egg quality is really bad.
And we only got one embryo out of that, which we were lucky to get one. Some people don't get any, which we did rounds where we didn't get any.
Yeah. And then I did another round out of pocket. And only then, after two rounds, if I were to do another one at this point, which I probably will if we want more kids, now it would be covered by insurance. But you have to prove infertility first. And in order to prove infertility, you have to do the egg retrieval. So it's like a very difficult thing to navigate, because
so how much do you have to put down before you can even apply to the insurance company? Like, how much do they want to see you? Is it a spend number or is it just a process number?
It seems a little bit, I don't understand the process fully. It seems a little bit subjective based on each case, because Molly and I now have both qualified for insurance. For me, it was two egg retrievals that ended up in very low embryo numbers. And for Molly, it was just the amount of IUIs. And that, I think, is what's difficult, at least being in the LGBT community, is for a straight couple, there were very clear rules. You know, it said you have to try for 12 months, then you have to do six IUIs, then you have to blah, blah, blah. For us, they were sort of like, oh, we don't know what to do with you because.
And because we were doing reciprocal IVF, which was Yael's egg into me. It was like, who's doing the egg retrieval? Who are we putting? It was just like kind of confusing.
And we don't have the option of the free, you know, like a straight couple, they could try for 12 months and that's free. And it's not easy. You know, I can't imagine what it would be like to be trying for a year to 2 years and not have any results. But at least at that point, when you show up at the doctor's office, you've already to an extent proven infertility, and IUIs are often covered in that case. Again, like so it's completely dependent on the state and the circumstance. But
do you think if you were going to do it all over again, you would have done anything differently from the start?
I don't think so. I also want to add just for the sake of the podcast that we are very, very, very lucky in that Molly's insurance covers IVF at all. Like when I say like, and then insurance covers it, I understand that that in and of itself is a huge deal. Most insurances are not covering IVF at all. I was in I remember going to the fertility pharmacy to pick up all this medicine.
I mean, the medication itself is thousands, like $6,000.
And I just was sitting next to this woman who basically had done like 8 IUIs, I think, and nothing was taking. And she was on the phone. And she said, the next step is IVF. I could cry just thinking about it. She said, I don't know who she was talking to, but she said, the next step is IVF. I don't know what to do. Like, she just didn't have an option. You know what I mean? Like, she said, my insurance won't cover it. So I just wanted to kind of disclaimer that I understand that even to get to the point where we said, and then insurance would cover it, is like such a blessing already.
And to be able to pay out of pocket for that first round, which wasn't covered, is also, we are so privileged and blessed to be able to have done that.
Yeah.
So.
And then to answer your question, I don't know that we would have done anything differently because like we said, we had no idea going in. We thought we're two young women.
And everyone kept saying, you got pregnant. Like, that's the hardest part of it.
Right. You got pregnant. Like, yeah, you had miscarriages, but at least you got pregnant in the first place. So I think that we sort of like, and of course we have this beautiful child here. So, and everybody kept saying, once you see her, you know, it's all going to be worth it. And it was so hard to know in those moments. But now obviously I look at her and can't imagine any other baby. I
couldn't imagine like the journey that we went on. We still have 2 more miscarriages to get through. I had 4 total before we realized that we had to switch to Yael. So I ended up not getting to carry. Oh, did you hear that? She's pooping.
It was all worth it, right?
That's going to be the opening for the podcast.
How do you support your like each other mentally, and how are you handling everything emotionally?
Well, when we decided finally that it was not going to be my egg and it was not going to be Molly's uterus, and that those were 2 dreams that we both had to give up on, we decided to go to therapy. And that was really, really, really helpful.
Together, we did couples therapy together to kind of process the 4 miscarriages that I had, which even though it was my body that had the miscarriages, we had to honor the fact that Yael also lost 4 babies. So we had to process that together, and then also process the fact that I will never carry a child and Yael may never have a genetic biological child.
Yeah. And also that we started therapy again, like kind of futzing, like going back and forth in the timeline. But eventually after we switched with using Molly's egg in my uterus, thank God our first attempt with IVF worked. So I got pregnant.
A first attempt at IVF with this combo
worked. And we're also lucky that we both have, you know, that we have 2 uteruses and 2 sets of eggs to work with. We always joke, we're like, oh my God, had either of us been straight, like this just, we wouldn't have.
We did ask after my 4th miscarriage, I said to the doctor, what would your advice be after if I was married to a man, what would you say to me? And he said, you would have to get a surrogate.
Right. And I probably would have had to get an egg donor. So it's like, I was her surrogate. She was my egg donor, but
I called her my surrogate throughout the process.
She did. It was really fun for me, but we sought out a therapist when we knew, like after I got pregnant, and it was like, okay, Molly's going to have to now like watch me go through pregnancy. And she said, I don't want to I don't want to harbor feelings of resentment or like, this is my baby. And I want to be able to support you in your pregnancy. And she was amazing.
I am amazing.
But definitely having that the therapist really helped us kind of like make sure that there weren't any feelings that we were burying deep, you know?
So I'm hearing therapy is a good piece of this overall, you know, puzzle to make sure that that's on board for people that are, for couples that are listening and considering. Therapy is important.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Any other advice?
I was going to say, again, we're very lucky that therapy is covered by insurance.
Yeah.
Again, this is a whole thing about insurance, basically.
And I wish, when you said it, had you done anything differently, I just realized I sort of wish we had started earlier. I think there was a lot that, we weren't processing just even with just having one miscarriage, let alone four. And just everything that we were going through and watching, you know, couples that started to try to have a baby, you know, like a year and a half after we started, get babies before we were even pregnant, was really hard. And I sort of like was angry instead of happy for my friend. Like it was just not, and also therapy really helped me deal with those feelings of jealousy that I think are very, you know, just talking to other couples, straight, LGBT community, all of it, who are going through this, that like those feelings of jealousy are can be really crippling. And so it's really good to deal with those, because I don't want to not be happy for people, you know.
Did you have to do any other things in advance of thinking that having a kid, doing any financial preparedness, talk to your families? Was there things in advance of you starting this process that you had to think about?
Certainly the financial aspect. I mean, again, we sort of didn't know how much we would end up spending on this. Like we had no idea that we would end up doing, you know, multiple rounds of IVF. And so we just sort of had the like financial planning of, okay, we know a kid is going to cost money. We're going to have a nanny. We're going to have to da da da. And then we just kind of had to reframe our brain a little bit, where it was like, okay, a child, like everybody says, is an investment. You're going to spend money on it. We just have to start a little bit earlier than many couples in that regard.
And what about talking with your families? Was that something that had to come up ahead of time, or was that really just a decision that you and Molly were like, okay, we're having the baby, let's go, let's figure it out?
Families were definitely involved, and like in a way that was something that felt very, that in, where we got to feel like any other couple, where, you know, we sort of said like, here's the deal. We're, you know, whereas a straight couple would say, we're trying now, you know, which is always funny because it's like you're just telling everybody you're having sex. But, you know, we were very open with both of our families about the process, and here's how many eggs we got, and here's how many turned into embryos. And so they were very aware the whole time. And it was very helpful to have them, I'll say, during what's called the 2-week wait, where it's after the embryo has been implanted and you have 2 weeks until you know if it stuck or not. So they were very, just calling every day and making sure, because that, to me at least, and I think for Molly too, that was the hardest part emotionally, was, okay, it's all in there. All this time, all this money, all this, you know, the emotional toll, the physical toll, it's just all comes down to a phone call that we get in 2 weeks.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, both of you, for sharing today. Really appreciate it. Last question before we wrap up, what's next for your family? What's like the next thing you're both looking forward to?
I mean, we already obviously want another one. we love Nora so, so, so much, and we want to give her a sibling. And it's also, I think we're kind of rearing to go, because we now know how long the process can take. And so we're already starting, like Molly just did another egg retrieval and we're making embryos.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Yael and Molly. This has been a production of the Giving Collective of the South Bay. If you connected with what you heard today and have a unique LGBTQ family formation story to share, reach out to us on our Instagram handle, I Am Giving Collective. We'd love to have you join us on an upcoming episode in our Pathway to Parenthood series. Let's keep the conversation going.